Chapter 6, An Evaluation of the Property Tax in Nebraska, by John Unger and Michael Wasilenko. Introduction. The property tax is the principal source of local revenue in Nebraska. Counties, townships, municipalities, school districts, and a variety of special districts all obtain most of their own source revenue through the property tax. Moreover, the property tax burden in the state is considerably higher than the national average. In fiscal year 1985, Nebraska's property taxes per capita were 25% above the property taxes in the average state, and only two states, New York and New Jersey, had higher effective property tax rates on single-family houses. Furthermore, more revenue is collected through local property taxes in Nebraska than through the state's three broad-based taxes, general sales, personal income, and corporate income, combined. Given this heavy reliance on property taxes, an understanding of the state and local finance system in Nebraska and of the role for state policy requires a careful analysis of property taxes in the state. This chapter provides such an analysis. In the first section, we examine property tax assessment procedures in Nebraska. We evaluate the administrative structure for assessment and examine the assessment of agricultural land. In the second section, we consider existing exemptions from property taxes in the state and evaluate several proposals for new property tax exemptions. In the third section, we explore the implications of heavier reliance on the property tax for the fiscal health of Nebraska's local governments. Assessment procedures. The property tax payment on a given property equals the nominal tax rate in the jurisdiction multiplied by the assessed value of the property. The effective property tax rate on a given property is defined to be the tax payment divided by the market value of the property. The effective rate, not the nominal rate, measures the economic burden of the tax and therefore is the appropriate rate to use in comparing the property tax burden on different taxpayers. Note that the effective property tax rate on a given property equals the nominal tax rate multiplied by the assessment sales ratio for that property. As a result, government officials can change the effective tax rate either by changing the assessment sales ratio or by changing the nominal tax rate. In this section, we consider assessments. In a later section, we consider differences in nominal tax rates across jurisdictions. The case for accurate assessments. The first principle of property tax design is that assessments should be as accurate as possible, that is, they should be as close as possible to the market values of taxable property. Accuracy is desirable both to prevent distortions in economic decisions and to ensure that all taxpayers are treated fairly. Distortions in economic decisions arise when assessment methods systematically under or overvalue certain types of property. One common error in the income approach to property assessment, for example, is to use a capitalization rate that is too high because it has not been corrected for anticipated inflation. Whenever the capitalization rate is too high, assessed values are too low. In other words, this error leads to a situation in which property assessed by the income method is underassessed relative to other property. In this situation, investment decisions are skewed toward this type of property. Both systematic and random errors in assessment methods can lead to a property tax that is unfair. At one level, this lack of fairness is obvious. Some property owners face higher assessment sales ratios and hence higher effective property tax rates than other property owners. In fact, however, the issue of fairness is more subtle than this argument indicates. If assessment errors are known at the time a property is purchased, they will be reflected to some degree in the purchase price of the property. Consider two houses, A and B, that are identical except that house A has a higher assessment. Then, well-informed house buyers will not be willing to pay as much for house A as for house B to the extent that assessment errors are reflected in purchase prices. Buyers of houses that are overassessed will not be in any worse economic position than buyers of houses that are underassessed. In other words, buyers will be compensated for relatively high taxes in the form of lower purchase prices. What then is the source of the unfairness? The answer is that any unanticipated change in a property's assessment sales ratio leads to a capital gain or loss on that property. If a house's assessment sales ratio declines, for example, because the market value of the house rises, and the assessed value is not updated, then the owner of that house will experience a drop in his effective property tax rate and a capital gain. This gain is fundamentally unfair. Assessment policy should not lead to arbitrary and unanticipated capital gains for some taxpayers and capital loss for others. The only way to avoid these arbitrary gains and losses is to set assessments as closely as possible to market values and to update assessments regularly as market values change. Administrative structure. In this section, we describe the administrative structure of the property tax in Nebraska. In the following section, we examine the quality of the assessments that this structure produces. On the plus side, while property taxes are levied by counties, townships, municipalities, school districts, and special districts, assessed values are determined only by a county assessor. This arrangement is desirable because many small local governments do not have the expertise to estimate market values accurately. Moreover, by limiting the number of jurisdictions with assessment responsibilities, this arrangement facilitates, in principle, both oversight by and technical assistance from the state government. Two different actors in the administrative structure check the accuracy of the assessed values set by the county assessor. The County Board of Equalization, whose members are the elected officials charged with governing the county, determines whether assessed values are indeed close to market values. This board can adjust the assessed values of individual properties, or of classes and subclasses of property, such as single-family houses or rangeland. It also hears taxpayers' appeals of their assessments. Second, the State Board of Equalization and Assessment, which is in the State Department of Revenue, makes certain that all counties have equally accurate assessments, as measured by assessment sales ratios. This state board has the authority to adjust the assessed values of a class of property within a county. The state board also is responsible for assessing a few classes of property, including utilities, railroads, airlines, and motor vehicles. In addition to these formal administrative checks on assessment accuracy, individual taxpayers can appeal the decisions of assessors or county boards to the state district court, and can appeal decisions of the state board to the state supreme court. Assessments quality. Although the administrative structure of the property tax appears to be reasonable, the true test of its merits lies in the quality of the assessments it produces. In this section, we evaluate the accuracy of assessments using information on assessment sales ratios for four different classes of property in 93 counties. This information is reported in Table 6.1. The four classes of property are improved residential property, improved and unimproved commercial and industrial property, improved agricultural property, and unimproved agricultural property. The standard measure of assessment accuracy is called the coefficient of dispersion, or COD. The COD indicates the magnitude of the variation in the assessment sales ratio for each property type in each county. A value of 0 for the COD for a property type within a county indicates that the assessment sales ratio is the same for all the property in that class. In that county, a larger COD means less accuracy, that is, more variation in property assessments. It is unrealistic to set a standard of 0 for the COD on the basis of existing assessment techniques. The International Association of Assessing Officers, IAAO, has set standards of between 0.05 and 0.15 for residential property, of up to 0.20 for vacant lots, farm property, and acreage, and of 0.15 in the case of other income-producing property. These guidelines allow us to interpret the information in Table 6.1. We first eliminate those counties for which the number of sales is either 0 or 1, as the coefficient of dispersion is not defined when there are fewer than two sales. As a result, 79 counties have CODs, For residential property, 45 counties have CODs. For industrial and commercial property, 76 counties have CODs. For improved agricultural property, and 78 counties have CODs. For unimproved agricultural property. For residential property, only 7 of the 79 counties have CODs, at the standard of 0.15, or below, and 34 of the 79 counties have CODs above 0.30, or more than double the IAAO standard for residential property. For commercial and industrial property, only 8 of the 45 counties have CODs, at 0.15, or below, and 22 of the 45 counties have CODs above 0.30, or more than double the relevant IAAO standard. By contrast, the assessment of agricultural property appears more accurate. For improved agricultural property, 20 of the 76 counties have CODs, at the standard of 0.20, or below, while only 13 of the 76 counties have CODs more than double the standard. A similar pattern is observed for unimproved agricultural property. In this category, 36 of the 78 counties have CODs, at or below the standard of 0.20, while only 9 of the 78 counties have CODs more than double the standard. One possible explanation for the inaccuracy of assessments is that many counties in Nebraska have few property sales. With few sales to observe, assessments are more subject to errors of judgment and are likely to exhibit larger CODs. If this hypothesis is true, then counties that have more sales of properties should have lower CODs. We test this hypothesis for each of the four property categories by using a standard statistical procedure, bivariate regression analysis, to determine whether counties with fewer sales have higher CODs. The results are reported in Table 6-2. In general, we find the expected negative relationship between the COD and the number of properties sold in the county. But this relationship is unexpectedly positive and statistically significant for unimproved agricultural property, and the relationships are not statistically significant for industrial and commercial property and for improved agricultural property. In addition, the number of sales explains at best only 6% of the variation across counties in the COD. We conclude that most of the explanation of relatively poor assessments in Nebraska lies in the administration of the property tax, and not in the lack of property sales in many of Nebraska's counties. We have not undertaken a detailed investigation into assessment procedures or the assessment process in Nebraska, and therefore do not offer any specific recommendations for the improvement of property assessment. Shortcomings in the training of assessors, a lack of professionally trained boards at the county level to oversee the assessment process and to hear appeals, and the short time available to the state board to review each county's assessments could all contribute to the relatively poor assessment record. We recommend that the state conduct an investigation into property assessment procedures and practices to determine which of these or other factors is at work. While the assessment process itself needs improvement, we believe that the basic administrative structure is sound. In particular, the active participation of the State Department of Revenue should be retained and their review role expanded. Assessment of agricultural land. A 1984 amendment to the Nebraska Constitution allowed the state legislature to treat agricultural land as a separate class of property. This amendment was designed to legalize the long-standing policy in Nebraska of preferential assessments for agricultural land. The preference was given by assessing agricultural land on the basis of its use value, which is the present value of the stream of earnings it generates, instead of on the basis of its market value, which is the amount it would sell for. This amendment was implemented through legislation and an official agricultural land valuation manual, which ensured that the assessment sales ratios for agricultural land remain far below 1 and significantly below the assessment sales ratios for other types of property. One estimate places the 1987 average assessment sales ratio for agricultural land in the state at 75%, compared to 85% or 90% for other kinds of property. In the 1987 Banner decision, however, the Nebraska Supreme Court ruled that the 1984 amendment does not authorize preferential assessment and that agricultural land, like all other property, must be assessed at its market value. Without a revised constitutional amendment, therefore, assessment sales ratios for agricultural land must be the same as the ratios for other property. Although it is a common procedure in other states, we see no policy justification for preferential assessment of agricultural land. This preferential assessment distorts economic choices between agricultural land and equipment, and constitutes an unfair difference in effective tax rates for owners of different types of property. Somewhat ironically, preferential assessments may not even confer significant benefits on current owners of farmland, because the value of these preferential assessments may have been capitalized into the value of the land when they purchased it. In other words, preferential assessment for farmland is a poor way to help farmers. If the state legislature wants to help farmers, it should do so through a cost-effective direct subsidy instead of by an ineffective and distortionary policy of preferential assessment for farmland. In addition, the underassessment of agricultural land is the result, in most cases, of a misapplication of the income approach to property assessment. Under normal circumstances, the market value of a property, that is, the amount of money a well-informed investor would pay for the property, equals the present value of the stream of earnings from owning it, so that the income approach to property assessment should give the same result as an approach based on comparable sales. The only exception arises when property is used for some activity other than the activity that generates the highest possible income. At the edges of an urban area, for example, land currently used for farming might generate a higher stream of earnings if the farmers were replaced by housing or shopping centers. This exception is covered by Nebraska's so-called Green Belt Amendment, which allows agricultural land on the urban fringe to be assessed at its value in agricultural use, even if its value is higher in some other use. In most parts of Nebraska, however, farming is the so-called highest and best use for land, so the income approach and the comparable sales approach should yield the same assessed values for agricultural land. The reason these two methods often lead to different assessed values is that assessors do not properly account for inflation in the income approach. The standard method is to take the current net income from the property and divide it by a capitalization rate that reflects current borrowing costs, depreciation, and perhaps some other factors. The problem with this method is that the net income in the numerator is implicitly assumed to remain constant over time, that is, not to increase with inflation, whereas the capitalization rate in the denominator is based on a borrowing rate that reflects anticipated inflation. In other words, the numerator is expressed in real terms, and the denominator is expressed in nominal terms, and the two parts of the calculation simply are not comparable. The best way to solve this problem is to subtract the rate of anticipated inflation from the capitalization rate. This correction translates the capitalization rate into real terms, and therefore makes it comparable to the real net income flow. If the current borrowing rate is 9%, for example, and anticipated inflation is 4%, then the correct capitalization rate, ignoring depreciation and other factors, is 9 minus 4 equals 5%. This correction can have a large impact on assessed values. Consider a piece of farmland that yields a net annual income of $10,000. Then the value of this property using a 9% capitalization rate is $10,000 over 0.09 equals $111,111, and its value using a 5% rate is $10,000 over 0.05 equals $200,000. Ignoring anticipated inflation, in other words, leads to a severe understatement of the value of the property. Although we have not examined assessing practices in Nebraska in detail, we see no reason to believe that the income approach, with a correct capitalization rate, would lead to substantially different assessed values for agricultural land than the comparable sales approach. Thus, the issue is not really which assessing method is appropriate, but whether the method used leads to accurate assessments, as measured by assessment sales ratios. Although preferential assessments for agricultural land are unfair, it also should be recognized that eliminating this long-standing preferential treatment will result in capital losses for some of the current owners of agricultural land. These capital losses reflect a common dilemma in property tax policy. Reforming the property tax often leads to one-time arbitrary gains or losses for particular taxpayers. For two reasons, however, we believe that these capital losses should not stand in the way of assessment reform in Nebraska. First, agricultural land makes up most of the tax base in many jurisdictions, particularly school districts, which collect most of the property taxes in the state. In two-thirds of the state's school districts, for example, agricultural land constitutes more than 75% of the tax base. In these jurisdictions, increases in assessed values on agricultural land can be accompanied by significant decreases in nominal tax rates so that the tax payments on agricultural land may not change at all. With no changes in tax payments, there will be no capital losses. Second, we believe that the long-term gains from assessment reform, both in the fairness of the tax and from the elimination of economic distortions, are worth the short-run costs imposed on some owners of farmland. It might be worthwhile to mitigate these short-term losses by phasing them in over a period of several years. We see no harm, in other words, from gradually moving the assessment sales ratio for agricultural land up to the ratios for other types of property. But once assessments on agricultural land, or on any other type of property, have been raised to market values, great care should be taken to prevent these assessments from falling below market values. In the future, any such decline in assessment sales ratios would generate arbitrary and unfair capital gains for the owners of agricultural land. Public utility property. Nebraska is unique among the states in the extent to which electric power is provided by public enterprises. Public power companies do not pay property taxes. Instead, they make payments to local governments based on their gross sales within those governments' boundaries. Some people have argued that public utility property should be subject to the property tax. We see no reason for such a change in policy. The value of public utility property is difficult to determine, so a payment based on gross sales is less arbitrary and cheaper to administer than a property tax payment. Moreover, questions of distortion and fairness are fundamentally different for publicly owned property than for private property. Because public officials, not the marketplace, control prices and other economic features of public utilities, differences in property tax treatment between public utility property and private property need not imply economic distortions. In addition, voters may prefer to receive compensation from the public utility in the form of lower electricity prices instead of in the form of property tax payments by the utility. Exemptions. Any analysis of property tax exemptions must begin with the widely accepted principle that, to avoid distortions in economic choices, and to treat all taxpayers equally, all forms of property should be taxed at an equal effective rate. Two exceptions to this principle are usually recognized. First, exemptions from property taxation can be justified if they give tax relief to particularly deserving low-income groups, such as the elderly or the disabled. Second, some forms of property can reasonably be exempt from property taxation if the administrative cost of determining their market values is prohibitive. In this section, we analyze property tax exemptions in Nebraska on the basis of this principle and its recognized exceptions. Farm equipment. Farm equipment, unlike other business equipment, is exempt from the property tax in Nebraska. In our judgment, this exemption is not appropriate. It deviates from the basic principle of property tax design, and therefore leads to distortions in economic decisions and to unequal treatment of taxpayers. Moreover, it cannot be justified on the grounds of fairness or of administrative cost. Many owners of farm equipment have high incomes, and low-income owners of farm equipment are no more deserving of assistance than low-income owners of farmland. In addition, we know of no evidence to suggest that the administrative cost of assessing farm equipment is significantly different from the administrative cost of assessing business equipment. Thus, neither exception applies and farm equipment should not receive an exemption. An analysis of the property tax exemption for farm equipment is complicated by the existence of the sales tax on farm equipment. Some people argue that the sales tax creates a rationale for this exemption. There may be a little truth to this argument. The sales tax may help to lessen the distortions in economic choices that arise because farm equipment is exempt from the property tax. For two reasons, however, we believe that the current arrangement is not at all satisfactory. First, the sales tax applies to both farm and business equipment, whereas the property tax exemption applies only to farm equipment. Thus, business equipment is subject to double taxation. Second, a state sales tax cannot be equivalent to local property tax with rates that carry from one jurisdiction to the next. Purchases of farm equipment in jurisdictions with relatively high property tax rates benefit from the current arrangement, whereas purchasers of farm equipment in jurisdictions with relatively low tax rates may be hurt by it. Moreover, the state sales tax, which is levied only once at the time of sale, is much lower than the average property tax, which is levied every year, so the current treatment amounts to a large tax break for farm equipment. In effect, the current arrangement violates principles of good sales tax design and good property tax design. The property tax would be fairer and less distortionary if farm equipment were not exempt from the property tax, and as explained in detail in another chapter, the sales tax would be fairer and less distortionary if neither farm nor business equipment were subject to the state sales tax. Thus, we recommend that the exemption for farm equipment be eliminated. Finally, it should be pointed out that eliminating the exemptions for farm equipment would not place an unacceptable burden on particular taxpayers. Adding farm equipment to the property tax base would enable jurisdictions to lower their nominal property tax rates, that is, to lower the tax payments on other types of property. Farm equipment obviously accompanies farmland, which, as pointed out earlier, makes up most of the tax base in a majority of school districts. In effect, therefore, eliminating the exemption for farm equipment redistributes the burden of the property tax from the owners of farmland to the owners of farm equipment, who are the same people. In short, this reform would eliminate economic distortions without any significant redistribution of the tax burden between the owners of farm property and the owners of non-farm property. This reform would cause a modest redistribution of the tax burden away from farmers with relatively little equipment per acre of land and toward farmers with a great deal of equipment. Although we have no data on the relationship between the ownership of equipment and income, we suspect that higher-income farmers own more equipment, so that this redistribution is likely to add modestly to the progressivity of the property tax. Other personal property. In Nebraska, as in many other states, several other kinds of personal property, including motor vehicles, airplanes, and motorboats, are subject to the property tax, whereas several other kinds of personal property, including inventories, intangible property, such as stocks and bonds, and household goods, such as furniture, are exempt from the tax. The principal justification for exempting these types of property is that they are difficult to assess. The exemptions therefore save the state money by avoiding large administrative costs and contribute to the fairness of the tax by avoiding arbitrary assessments. These exemptions may result in small economic distortions between taxed and untaxed types of personal property, and to some degree they confer an unfair advantage on owners of untaxed personal property. We believe, however, that these exemptions are sensible, their advantages, in terms of administrative costs saved and arbitrary assessments avoided, outweigh their relatively modest costs. Homestead exemptions. Nebraska currently allows homestead exemptions for low-income elderly homeowners and certain totally disabled people. The state reimburses local governments for the property taxes lost through these exemptions. In 1987, the cost of these exemptions was about $33 million. In our judgment, these exemptions serve legitimate equity objectives by lowering the property tax burden on groups that the state legislature views as particularly needy groups. Thus, we recommend that these exemptions be retained. The state legislature has considered proposals to extend homestead exemptions to all homeowners, to low-income homeowners, and even to all households, including renters. Proposals such as these, which have been implemented in several other states, help make the property tax more progressive, particularly if they are limited to low-income households. In order to be fair, any additional homestead exemptions implemented in Nebraska should apply to both farm and non-farm households. Homestead exemptions cannot be evaluated without considering how they would be funded. They would not be desirable if local governments were forced to fund them, that is, if local governments were forced to raise their property tax rates to cover the revenue loss from the new exemptions. They might be desirable, however, if, like current homestead exemptions, they were financed by the state. In effect, such proposals would lower the burden of property taxes and raise the burden of state taxes. The desirability of this switch would depend on the source of the required state funds. Paying for homestead exemptions by raising the state income tax, for example, would improve both the fairness and the efficiency of the state tax system. The major disadvantage of this approach to lowering property taxes is that it does not enable the state to direct its assistance to the jurisdictions in the poorest fiscal condition. If it is implemented, therefore, a general homestead exemption should be complemented by a new program of state aid to needy jurisdictions. Differences in tax rates across jurisdictions, even with accurate assessments across all types of property and all counties, effective property tax rates can vary from one jurisdiction to another because different jurisdictions set different nominal tax rates. Differences in effective property tax rates across jurisdictions can cause market distortions and, under some circumstances, can be a source of inequity. In this section, we examine the causes and consequences of tax differences across local governments in Nebraska and suggest some policy responses for the state government. Causes of existing differences. Tax rates vary across local governments for three reasons: economic and social constraints, local preferences, and management quality. These three reasons are recognized in the literature, are discussed in this section. Different local governments face widely different fiscal constraints, as determined by economic and social factors outside their control. These constraints are examined in detail in our chapters on counties, municipalities, and school districts in Nebraska. As explained in those chapters, some local governments have a high revenue-raising capacity, in the sense that they can raise a higher-than-average amount of revenue per capita at an average tax burden on their residents. In addition, some local governments have high expenditure needs, in the sense that they must spend more than average per capita in order to provide public services of average quality. A local government's overall fiscal condition is determined by the balance between its revenue-raising capacity and its expenditure need. A local government in relatively good fiscal condition is forced, through no fault of its own, either to levy higher-than-average tax rates or to accept lower-than-average service quality, or both. A local government's property tax base has a significant impact on its revenue-raising capacity. As explained in our chapters on local government finance, revenue-raising capacity has two components. Jurisdictions with higher incomes or with an ability to export some of their tax burden non-residents can raise more money per capita at a given tax burden on their residents. Because a large share of commercial and industrial property is owned by national corporations, a large share of a local government's taxes on such property are paid by non-resident national shareholders. In other words, the presence of commercial and industrial property raises a jurisdiction's revenue-raising capacity and therefore enables it, all else equal, to lower its property tax rate. Revenue-raising capacity through the property tax varies widely from one local government to another. Consider, for example, municipalities' revenue-raising capacity through the property tax. Expressing this capacity in index form, with a value of 100, in the average municipality, we find that the index ranges from a minimum of 50 to a maximum of 169. With an average tax burden on its residents, in other words, The municipality with the lowest capacity can only raise half as much revenue per capita as the average municipality, and the municipality with the highest capacity can raise 69% more revenue per capita than average. In addition, large cities tend to have a higher concentration of commercial and industrial property, and hence a higher capacity, than small cities. The average index for cities with populations above 10,000 is 137, and no large city has a below average capacity, whereas the average index for cities with populations below 1,000 is only 96. The second reason that property tax rates vary from one local government to another is that different local governments have different preferences for public services. For example, voters with high incomes tend to prefer high-quality public services, so that, all else equal, jurisdictions with high average incomes spend more on public services. The third reason for property tax rate variation is that some public officials are more efficient than others. Good management skills and practices lower the amount that a jurisdiction must spend to obtain public services of any given quality level. Consequences of existing differences. Differences in property tax rates across jurisdictions cause distortions in economic decisions and can be a source of inequity. A basic principle of public finance is that economic choices are distorted whenever they are influenced by tax considerations instead of just by underlying economic factors. In the case of property taxes, business firms' decisions about where to locate may be influenced by, and hence distorted by, differences in property tax rates across jurisdictions. However, the magnitude of this distortion is difficult to determine. Some studies find that property taxes have a significant impact on the location decisions of a firm within a metropolitan area, other studies find that they do not. One of the key reasons that the impact of property taxes on firms' location decisions has been difficult to determine is that firms also care about service quality. In some cases, firms are attracted to locations with good police and fire protection, or with a good educational system for their employees' children. The effects of taxes and services often are difficult to untangle because high taxes, which repel firms, may be accompanied by high service quality, which attracts firms. Thus, high property tax rates distort economic decisions only to the extent that they are not used to finance public services that firms care about. Differences in tax rates across local governments also can be a source of inequity, as the residents in some jurisdictions face a much higher tax burden than the residents of other jurisdictions. However, it is important to remember that, to some degree, property tax rates vary because of choices made by voters and their elected officials. It makes no sense to say that the voters in one jurisdiction are treated unfairly because they freely decided to finance high-quality public services through a higher-than-average property tax rate. In fact, inequity only arises to the extent that differences in property tax rates are due to differences in economic and social factors outside the control of voters and local officials, that is, differences in jurisdictions' fiscal condition. Another way to put this is that a system of local government treats some taxpayers unfairly if it leaves them in a position in which they must, through no fault of their own, levy higher-than-average higher property tax rates in order to obtain public services of average quality. Reliance on a property tax contributes to this inequity because all jurisdictions do not have the same revenue-raising capacity through the property tax. As noted earlier, jurisdictions with high concentrations of commercial and industrial property have relatively high revenue-raising capacity through the property tax, all else equal. Lowering reliance on the property tax, therefore, has the potential for improving the equity of the system of local governments in Nebraska. Policies to minimize differences. To minimize the economic distortions and inequity caused by differences in property tax rates across local governments in Nebraska, the state may want to implement policies that, to some degree, replace property tax revenues with revenues from sources that do not vary so much across jurisdictions. In this section, we consider three such policies: granting local governments access to other broad-based taxes, instituting general homestead exemptions for the property tax, and increasing state aid to local governments. One way to cut local property tax rates is to grant local governments access to another broad-based tax. In fact, municipalities in Nebraska are allowed to levy a general sales tax, although only 16 municipalities currently do so, unfortunately. However, this approach has little promise for eliminating either the distortions or inequity that accompany property tax rate differences. First, this approach is likely to replace property tax rate differences across jurisdictions with differences in other tax rates, which also distort economic choices. For example, municipal sales tax may induce people to shop outside municipalities or in municipalities that do not levy the tax. The only way to prevent such distortions is to require that the new tax be levied at the same rate in all locations in the state, an approach that would severely undercut local freedom of choice. More importantly, another broad-based local tax would do little to improve the fiscal capacity of the neediest jurisdictions, and therefore would do little to improve the equity of the system of financing local governments. Remember that a jurisdiction's revenue-raising capacity depends on its income and its ability to export taxes to non-residents. If a local government cannot export any of its tax burden, then giving it access to another tax source does not add anything to its capacity, regardless of whether it uses a property, sales, or earnings tax. The revenue it collects must all come out of the pockets of its own residents. Moreover, a local government's ability to export its tax burden to non-residents may be very similar through any broad-based tax. In Nebraska, jurisdictions with a relatively high concentration of commercial and industrial property, which leads to exporting through the property tax, are likely to have relatively high sales to non-resident consumers, which leads to exporting through a local sales tax, and a relatively high share of commuters, which leads to exporting through a local earnings tax. As a result, access to another broad-based tax is likely to have only a modest effect, or even no effect at all, on the revenue-raising capacity of most local governments in Nebraska. A second approach is to implement a general homestead exemption. As pointed out earlier, this approach would lead to lower property taxes as long as the state government reimbursed local governments for the homestead exemptions received by their residents. By cutting reliance on the property tax, this approach would lessen differences in property tax rates across jurisdictions, and would therefore lessen distortions in economic behavior associated with those differences. Moreover, this approach would lessen the inequity caused by reliance on local property taxes, because it would replace some portion of local property taxes on homeowners, and perhaps renters, with a state payment financed by a broad-based state tax. Although financing homestead exemptions through state tax would reduce inequity, the ability of the state to help troubled jurisdictions through homestead exemptions is severely limited. After all, reimbursements for homestead exemptions granted would be the same for every homeowner and would not be directed toward jurisdictions in poor fiscal condition. This point is not intended to be a criticism of homestead exemptions, because they are designed to help individuals. These exemptions cannot be expected to channel assistance to needy jurisdictions. The third approach is to increase state aid to local governments. Increases in state aid would enable local governments to cut property taxes without sacrificing service quality, and thereby to lessen the economic distortions caused by property tax differences. Moreover, as explained in detail in other chapters, state aid can be directed toward the jurisdictions in the poorest fiscal condition, and therefore can lessen the inequity caused by reliance on the property tax, as well as the inequity caused by other factors that contribute to a jurisdiction's fiscal condition. The only disadvantage of this approach is that it does not, by itself, guarantee that local governments actually will lower their property tax rates. One possible solution to this problem is to require local governments, as a precondition to receiving aid, to cut their property tax levy in the year they receive the new aid by the amount of the new aid, less an adjustment for inflation. After the first year of the new program, local voters should be allowed to decide whether they want to raise their property tax rates. To make certain that voters have good information and are given a chance to participate in any decision to raise property tax rates, the state should pass a full disclosure law. Finally, some people have suggested that the best way for Nebraska to lower property taxes and the distortions and inequity they cause is to implement more stringent property tax limitations. We emphatically disagree with this suggestion, because they do not replace lost property tax revenue with revenue from some other source. Strict property tax limitations impose a severe hardship on certain jurisdictions, particularly jurisdictions in poor fiscal condition, which must levy higher than average property tax rates in order to provide services of average quality. Moreover, tax limitations represent an arbitrary restriction on voters' choices. We believe a far preferable strategy is to use a full disclosure law, which ensures that property tax rates cannot be raised unless voters are well informed and still agree to a rate increase. Conclusions. The property tax in Nebraska is relatively well designed, but far too high, and the administrative process needs improvement. Nebraska should study ways to improve its property tax administration. The administrative structure for the tax and most of the state-determined features of the tax should be retained. The recent Nebraska Supreme Court decision eliminating preferential assessment of farmland was a step in the right direction. This preferential assessment should not be reinstated through a new constitutional amendment. Moreover, the exemption for farm equipment is the one major flaw in Nebraska's property tax design, and it should be eliminated. Both the preferential assessment of farmland and the exemption for farm equipment are unfair, distort economic behavior, and ironically probably do almost nothing to help farmers. In contrast, the existing homestead exemptions meet legitimate equity objectives and should be retained. Nebraska's heavy reliance on the property tax contributes to the poor fiscal condition of many of the state's local governments. Jurisdictions with low incomes or low concentrations of commercial and industrial property, and hence a low ability to export their property tax burden to non-residents, are in poor fiscal condition, all else equal, because they cannot raise an average amount of revenue per capita without imposing a much higher than average property tax burden on their residents. Thus, the fairness of Nebraska's state local revenue system would be greatly enhanced by cutting local government's reliance on local property taxes. One way to cut property taxes is to implement more general homestead exemptions and fund them out of state taxes. Although this policy would help lessen the burden of high property taxes on individual taxpayers, it would not provide relatively more assistance to local governments in relatively poor fiscal condition, and therefore would not alleviate the fundamental unfairness of the current heavier reliance on property taxes. Another way to cut property taxes is through state-imposed property tax limitations. Even if these limitations could be made effective, which is unlikely, they would primarily serve to limit local choice and would be particularly hard on the local governments in the poorest fiscal condition. We conclude that new, equalizing state aid programs are the fairest and most cost-effective way to reduce Nebraska's heavier reliance on local property taxes. Increases in state aid would allow local governments to cut property taxes, and state aid programs could be designed to provide more assistance to local governments that are, through no fault of their own, in relatively poor fiscal condition.